As I sit down to write here, amidst the shadows of vine leaves under the blue sky of southern Italy, it comes to me with a certain quality of astonishment that my participation in these amazing adventures of Mr. Cavour was, after all, the outcome of the purest accident. It might have been anyone. I fell into these things at a time when I thought myself removed from the slightest possibility of disturbing experiences. I had gone to Lim because I'd imagined it the most uneventful place in the world. "Here, at any rate," said I shall find peace and a chance to work." And this book is the sequel. So utterly at variance is destiny with all the little plans of men. I may perhaps mention here that very recently I had come an ugly cropper in certain business enterprises. Sitting now surrounded by all the circumstances of wealth, there is a luxury in admitting my extremity. I can admit even that to a certain extent my disasters were conceivably of my own making. It may be there are directions in which I have some capacity, but the conduct of business operations is not among these. But in those days I was young, and my youth, among other objectionable forms, took that of a pride in my capacity for affairs. I am young still, in years, but the things that have happened to me have rubbed something of the youth from my mind. Whether they have brought any wisdom to light below, it is a more doubtful matter. It is scarcely necessary to go into the details of the speculations that landed me at Lim, in Kent. Nowadays, even about business transactions, there is a strong spice of adventure. I took risks. In these things, there is invariably a certain amount of give and take, and it fell to me finally to do the giving, reluctantly enough. Even when I'd got out of everything, one cantankerous creditor saw fit to be malignant. Perhaps you have met that flaming sense of outraged virtue, or perhaps you have only felt it. He ran me hard. It seemed to me, at last, that there was nothing for it but to write a play, unless I wanted to drudge for my living as a clerk. I have a certain imagination and luxurious tastes, and I meant to make a vigorous fight for it before that fate overtook me. In addition to my belief in my powers as a businessman, I had always, in those days, had an idea that I was equal to writing a very good play. It is not, I believe, a very uncommon persuasion. I knew there is nothing a man can do outside legitimate business transactions that has such opulent possibilities, and very probably that biased my opinion. I had indeed got into the habit of regarding this unwritten drama as a convenient little reserve put by for a rainy day. That rainy day had come, and I set to work. I soon discovered that writing a play was a longer business than I had supposed. At first I had reckoned 10 days for it, and it was to have a pied-à-terre while it was in hand that I came to Lim. I reckon myself lucky in getting that little bungalow. I got it on a 3 years' agreement. I put in a few sticks of furniture, and while the play was in hand, I did my own cooking. My cooking would have shocked Mrs. Bond, and yet, you know, it had flavour. I had a coffee-pot, a saucepan for eggs, and one for potatoes, and a frying pan for sausages and bacon. Such was the simple apparatus of my comfort. One cannot always be magnificent, but simplicity is always a possible alternative. For the rest, I laid an 18-gallon cask of beer on credit, and a trustful baker came each day. It was not, perhaps, in the style of Sybaris, but I've had worse times. I was a little sorry for the baker, who was a very decent man indeed, but even for him, I hoped. Certainly, if anyone wants solitude, the place is Lim. It is in the clay part of Kent, and my bungalow stood on the edge of an old sea cliff and stared across the flats of Romney Marsh at the sea. In very wet weather, the place is almost inaccessible, and I've heard that, at times, the postman used to traverse the more succulent portions of his route with boards upon his feet. I never saw him doing so, but I can quite imagine it.